Senate Tax Committee to order. Members, we've got three bills up this morning and a confirmation of Cheryl Ramstead to the Tax Court. Ms. Ramstead?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Why don't you take a chair at that? We're a little discombobulated here today because this is the room the Tax Conference Committee is meeting in, and so this isn't how we normally look. We actually normally look just a little more organized than this. But
it looks like a hard-working group, Chairman Bach.
They have a lot of work left to do it, too.
I understand.
Ms. Ramstead, why don't you tell us a little something about yourself, your background, and maybe your experience, what your experience has been on the Tax Court.
Certainly. Thank you, Chairman Bach. Members of the committee, Senator Pogemiller and I were just commenting on how it doesn't seem possible that 6 years ago next Tuesday, I was before this committee for my first appointment to the Tax Court. That time has gone very, very quickly. During that time, I've heard hundreds of tax cases. I've come to greatly respect the two colleagues I work with, Kathleen Voss-Sandberg and George Perez. And I've really gained a tremendous respect for the quality and caliber of lawyers practicing before the tax court. We do have a lot of pro se litigants who come in and challenge their property tax matters, and certainly that's an important part of our work. But we also have a very fine bar that practices before us, and it's a challenging and very rewarding job to hold. Just to give you a flavor of the types of cases that I have handled, the last major trial I had was a two-week trial involving the valuation of the Eden Prairie Mall, which a few days later, General Growth Properties ended up declaring bankruptcy, which left things a little bit in flux. But since they were the initiating party, it didn't do anything to the case, and is now under consideration for me to issue a decision. Another case I heard not too long ago involved Ticketmaster and their processing UPS courier charges and whether those can be subject to sales tax by the state of Minnesota for business done in the state. So it's everyday kinds of issues, and you see behind the scenes and get to know the players, and it's most interesting and rewarding. I'm known to be ahead of schedule on my cases in terms of deciding them. We have 90 days to decide them, and I think my next case isn't due until sometime in August. And I like to be current. I think it's important for taxpayers who come before the court to get a resolution. Our cases, when they are appealed, go immediately to the Minnesota Supreme Court. But it's been a privilege to serve in this capacity for the past 6 years, and I would very much like to continue serving the state in this capacity. These cases are important to taxpayers as well as to the state, and I'd like to answer any questions that you might have about the work.
Has the Supreme Court ever overturned any of your decisions?
Of course. Of course. We learn from them, though. Hopefully, we don't make the same mistake twice. It's been an interesting learning process all the way around.
Thank you. Any questions, members?
I move the recommendation.
Senator Pogemiller moves a recommendation that Cheryl Amelia Ramstead be recommended for confirmation to the State Senate. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairman Bach, and members of the committee. Good luck on your remaining work.
We'll need more than luck. Members, we have two public finance bill and the department's technical bill that we heard in the committee, and they were rolled into the omnibus tax bill and sent up to the floor and voted on the floor as provisions in the omnibus tax bill. We'd like to move those two bills out of the committee, get them up on the floor so that we can have them up for consideration in the final 2 weeks of the session here. So we have amendments?
They should be.
Oh, they're in here?
Which one do you want to do first?
Let's take up public 1257, the public finance bill. council tells me we don't have copies of the actual delete all amendment to the public finance bill. So we'll start with the department's bill, Senate File 681. And members, we also went through this, made a number of changes, and there's an amendment that gets it into the form of the same language that's contained in the omnibus tax bill. It's the A3 amendment. Senator Skoy moves the A3 amendment. Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. And then there's an A4 amendment that actually came to us from the department after the omnibus tax bill had left the floor. So this is recommended by the department. Senator Skoy moves the A4 amendment. Any questions? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Members, the bill is in front of us, Senate File 681, and this is, other than the A4 amendment that we just put on, this is the language that's contained in the omnibus tax bill that the committee marked up these provisions earlier. Senator Skoy moves that Senate File 681 be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wong.
Mr. Chair, I was under the understanding that I would have an opportunity to put the use deed provision into
this. Do you have the amendment?
I do.
Okay, let's.
It's in there.
The council tells me it's already in the A3. Your language is
it already is already in the A3. Very good.
And it's the language that your committee worked out.
Yes. Yes. Very good.
Any questions? House File 681. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Contrary, no. The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Public Finance Bill, Senate File 1257.
The copies are on their way, but do you want, it's just what was in. This is the summary of what's currently in there.
Senator Metzen, if we lay while we're waiting for the copies of the amendment to 1257 to come, maybe we could get started on your bill. Chair lays Senate File 1257 on the table.
Thank
Senator Metzen
you.
Has Senate File 2078. Senator Metzen, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I think we've got, in my opinion, of course I'm carrying the bill, but I think it's one of the most exciting, positive bills the legislature will be looking at this session. There's a lot of budget problems and other problems, but we think that this bill will go a long ways in stimulating economic development in the state of Minnesota. This is what I call the Minnesota Stimulus Package Bill. This will create jobs, 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 jobs. It is estimated that the passage of this bill will create $3.5 to $5 billion shovel-ready projects. I've got a list in my bottom drawer upstairs of projects statewide that are ready to go. But we need a little help. And we're asking for some help from the Minnesota Senate and the House and the governor with this package. The Obama stimulus package does a lot. It does a lot for transportation, bridges, and other issues like that. But this is a vertical proposal. This is where buildings will go up. And the state will help in this area, I hope. This is not project specific. This is statewide. This legislation, it's got a high number. The reason it has a high number And I think it's in your packet, a document called Construction Jobs and Coalition. Is that there, Mr. Langseth or whoever? This on the left is the group that has been working on this legislation for now. It's gone on 5 months. There's architects, engineers, union people, some public officials, and you can see for yourself that this wasn't made up in the last couple of weeks. This has been an ongoing project, and all those people are involved to get people back to work. And again, this is the industries are hurting. You'll hear testimony from Mr. Anfang, from the president of Minnesota Trades, that about 40% of the tradespeople are sitting on the bench. And we think that, we don't think this will go a long way in getting these people back to work. There's many parts to the bill. One, it's we're going to set aside $100 million in a guaranteed loan fund. What's happening now is the banking community is so skittish about making loans that instead of what they do a year or two ago, put out 80-85% of the loan to value. Now if they make them at all, they're putting out 50-60%. This would fill that gap up front where we would guarantee 15-25% of that loan. The banks are still putting the money out, and certainly they have to do the due diligence at a 60-65% loan, so they're not going to, you know, just fall over because of this guarantee. They still have to make a prudent loan. But this will leverage that 15-25% to get these people to work again. And you still, if you're borrowing the money, you're going to still need your put money, your 10-15-20% down. And so, and again, I'm going to repeat it again, that the banks still have to, I mean, they're on the hook for 60% of it, so they're not going to just fall over and let anything go by. But there's a lot of components in here. There's some green building bonding provisions where the cities or governmental units can make some loans on green projects, bonding loans. There's energy conservation assessments in here. We extend the one of the sections extends the building permit extension. What that does, the way I understand it, you take out a building permit and it's thousands of dollars, and this extends that period for a year. So in other words, if you do run out because of the economy and things are going and you need a little more time, you don't have to come. You've already got the building permit, but you don't have to come out and spend thousands of dollars more the second year to redo it. This bill has been heard, I believe, four times already. Jobs Committee I chair, a couple of times. Senator Tomasoni's committee, Senator Cohn's committee. And it's had a lot of steps to get to this spot today.
There's one thing here, you know, the TIF thing.
On this committee, we're looking at tax credit advance loans for the first-time home buyers. Oh, in this bill, we also put aside $3 million with the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. The idea there is that the federal tax credits for first-time home buyers is $8,000 credits, but you get them over a period of years. We're trying to work with the Housing Finance Agency and see if the state can upfront some of that money, you know, $5,000 or $6,000 of the $8,000, and we're still, that's work in progress, but that would help jumpstart that and get that down payment for those younger people that need the money to upfront money for their house. We've got, I know you've talked about it before, Mr. Chairman, I think it's in your other bill, but I'd like it to stay in here if possible, but that's the historic building credits, this coalition that we talked about. That was one of their strong points, and I know it's in your omnibus bill, but that's also in this bill. There's some TIF extensions here. There's a number of these folks that, quite frankly, need a little more time. That's in here. And with that, I think I'll stop. That's a brief overview, but I honestly believe we've got many, many. Oh, and this also, Deed is in this mix, too. I mean, they've got to issue the loan guarantee documents, and they have to certify that there's need out there and
within the district.
Okay.
And this money will be put aside in a general fund, and quite frankly, the ideal world is that the ideal world is none of this would have to be used, but we're realistic, and if there's some defaults, we could get hurt a little bit, but I think the advantage is far, far outreached the downside of doing any of this. So with that, I think I'll have, I've got with me a couple of these, two of the co-chairs, Dick Anfang, the president of Minnesota Building Trades, and former majority leader Roger Moe, who's a consultant helping out here. And as you can see on this, and David Simmerad, the Association General Contract of the Association of General Contractors of Minnesota. They're three of the co-chairs, and they can briefly, I know you're busy here, but again, this is a very positive step to jumpstart a lot of projects, and it will just add on top of what the current legislative, what Obama and they're doing in D.C. So with that, I'll have a couple of these gentlemen come up and I can sit back for a second.
Well, Senator Metzen, I was just looking with counsel here on page 17, section 13, the 10-year extension of TIF. Seems like we need some language in there that where the 10-year extension is granted, it's for a project in the district. Because it doesn't say that right now. So I think we need to tighten that up a little bit. And then the paragraph below where it defines a stimulus project as any capital project, that seems like that could be almost anything. It seems like we ought to have some kind of a minimum. If we're going to start exempting projects from sales tax and everything, there ought to be some kind of a threshold that a project needs to be so that it's not some, $100,000 storefront or something.
And we've talked about that. We agreed to that. You can.
So Mr. Chairman, if we don't do it here, I'll work with counsel and we'll try to work on tightening up a little bit, putting some kind of a threshold in on any capital project.
We've discussed that. We agree with that.
And then something on the TIF that allows the extension to happen in the TIF district.
Okay, yeah. We would agree with that.
Mr. Anfang, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Dick Anfang. I have the privilege of being the president of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council.
Yeah, we can do that.
This jobs coalition bill is probably the most important bill that the construction trades has been a part of in my career. The 4.5 months that we've been meeting with a very, very diverse group of business people, business professionals, labor folks, has resulted in many, many meetings. We meet twice a week, and we put initially all of the issues that we felt as a coalition on the table for discussion as possible opportunities to stimulate and advance the vertical construction industry in our state, which is in the state of almost near lockdown. We did this at a time when we knew the legislature was extremely busy dealing with an unprecedented budget deficit and felt that possibly this group of folks from the community could help out and come together with some language that could help you and help the state create jobs through the construction industry, which many folks believe will help a lot. We are about 10% of the economy. And when 50% plus of that 10%, both union and non-union folks, are unemployed, that's a huge hole in our economy. And we, the coalition, believe that the language that ultimately came out of these many, many discussions, whereby many, many ideas were put on the table, many are not in the bill. today as you see it, but it was discussed. And this is where we believe the best effect can come. In short, the Senate File 2078, we believe, is the light at the end of the unemployment tunnel for the construction industry in the state of Minnesota. The building trades played but a small part in this large effort. We tried to focus on the most meaningful options, options which would most likely result in stimulus to vertical construction in Minnesota. We, the building trades, did not attempt to have new prevailing rate language put in. We did not ask for project labor agreement language, anything that could be a political lightning rod. We felt and respected the community endeavor as a the community group as an endeavor to benefit the industry, period. We recognize that the industry needs a boost, and in the short run, and the projects which result will go to that entity which best suits the owner's needs. The bill does not need a political lightning rod. It needs to pass and become law. The building trades in Minnesota stands at 35 to 40% unemployment. It will get worse before it gets better. The people, many of the people who are currently employed, fortunately enough, many, many of those are working short days, short weeks, less than 40 hours a week, putting a burden on their budget. The folks that have been unemployed, many of them for, I mean, we came to the last legislative session intending that to be the jobs opportunity, and the economy got worse, much to our dismay. Beyond our elements caused this beyond our control, but it's a fact. These people have been unemployed, our members, non-union people, folks, not construction workers, but architects, designers, real estate attorneys, unemployed, losing their homes, not being able to take care of their families the way they should be. They want to work. They need to work. Minnesota needs to help put them to work. We believe that Senate File 2078 is a small commitment that the state can make to help stimulate this economy through the construction industry. We urge the committee to pass this project-neutral bill without amending to specific projects, without amending to specific union language or other impediments which might ultimately hinder ultimate passage of the bill. A strong construction industry with business and labor and finance working in harmony will make a stronger and a better Minnesota. Senate File 2078 will be a money-making proposition for the state of Minnesota, meaning a stronger construction industry, a stronger economy, and a stronger business climate. The Building Trades thanks you for your time and urges your support.
Thank you, Mr. Hankman. Mr. Cimarron.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this morning. And I'd like to say that I'm proud and honored to be a co-chair of the Job Stimulus Coalition. And as mentioned earlier by Senator Metzen, the federal stimulus bill does very little to affect the vertical construction industry in Minnesota. We have about 18,000 construction firms in Minnesota. 94% of those are small businesses employing fewer than 20 workers. 70% of those firms are not impacted by the stimulus bill. The building industry is at a standstill because of the credit freeze and the general economy. Minnesota is 10th in construction job loss compared to the other states for the period February 08 through February 09. And in this 12-month period, lost 18,700 jobs, or 16.2%. The coalition, as Mr. Amfang has stated, did not identify any particular project or group of projects or locations that this should address. It did not identify any particular labor language. And the reason, and I will say this because I've got experience dealing with the building trades unions here in Minnesota since 1988, we have a very strong relationship. We don't get along on every issue, but on most issues we get along, and I would say our relationship is very strong and very positive, and we do our very best to give the construction owner value for their money. It is a great time to build. The producer price index shows that construction materials costs have subsided, and it's a great investment right now, and we need to put people to work. So we ask your support of Senate File 2078. We think it's not perfect legislation, but we've done our very best to set the table with tools that can be used to put many, many construction workers back to work. Thank you.
Senator Moll.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Tax Committee, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Roger Moll, and I am honored to be a co-chair with my colleagues here on this effort that have put together this proposal that's before you. Let me express my thanks to Senator Metzen for taking on this additional burden, I guess, this late in the session, and also I want to express our thanks to the staff of the Senate. They've been really fantastic in working with all of the ideas, and want to make sure that we thank them. I used this line before. I liked it, so I'm going to use it again. You might not like it, but in 1982, there was a candidate for governor whose simple slogan was, jobs, jobs, jobs. That could just as well be the slogan for Senate File 2078. Jobs, jobs, jobs. That's the common ground that you see standing before you. You have a handout. If you just want to look on the left side of that handout and take a look at that 65 or so different organizations, diverse organizations representing different trade unions and the construction companies and architect firms and all of those entities and individuals that are directly affected by this recession that we faced in the construction industry. As has been mentioned, the federal stimulus dollars has been very good, but it's for a particular kind of construction. This proposal focuses on something a little bit different that would obviously involve more individuals. And it has been mentioned, this is project neutral. However, one of the things that brought all of this to where we are today is the fact that many contractors, many individuals came and laid out a whole host of projects that are ready to go. And I think it added up somewhere between $3 and $5 billion. And if I can steal one of David's lines, I think for every $1 billion of construction, it's about 21,000 jobs that they can document from start to finish in that industry. So it's extremely important. This is our effort to try to do something here in Minnesota. You see the number. It's a very high number, 2078. You know it was introduced late. So this is an extraordinary process that we're involved in, but I think these are extraordinary times for the construction industry, and would hope that you would look favorably upon this proposal that these individuals and all these organizations have spent many months putting together. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Metzen, I notice one of the provisions in the bill is the credit for historic structure rehab. The Senate has already passed that. It was in our omnibus tax bill. And So I don't think we need to carry it a second time. It ends up being carried on the spreadsheet and costing money here. So Senator already has a position on it. It's something that's being considered by the tax conference committee in this room. So,
Chairman, I understand that. I just Senator, you recognize how important this piece is to the puzzle. So I just want to make sure that
it's
the language gets done somewhere.
Very, very important, and it's already in front of the conference committee. So Senator Skoy moves to delete Section 3. Remembers that as the historic structure rehab provisions that are already been passed by the Senate. On the Skoy motion.
What's this?
Senator Metzen?
Pardon?
Senator Skoy moved to delete Section 3. The Senate's already passed that, so it's already subject to the conference
I understand that, but like you mentioned, that it's very, I believe it's a very important part of this equation, and I just, it's got to get done. So I understand that the motion.
On the Skoy motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Section 3 is deleted. The
TIF. Mr.
TIF. Members, we want to clean up
17.
The TIF language just a little bit on page 17. Section 13, line 17.25. I think we need to make it clear that the 10-year extension of the TIF is for projects within the district. So
we understand that.
Senator Skoy, on line 17.25, moves under the word project insert, located within the district. In discussion? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
A contrary, no. The motion prevails. And then, Senator Metzen, we're going to spend a little time, and we'd like to visit with you, I think, before we get to the floor, to give some definition to what a capital project is. So we get some kind of a threshold in there so that it's not just anything. So we'll have a little discussion about that. I don't think we're probably quite ready to do that today, but maybe before we get to the floor, we can have a little more of a definition of what a capital project might be.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
We have, I believe, the A27 amendment that fixes that low-income housing credit up a little bit. And Mr. Herman, did you wish to explain that a little bit more? Would that be all right if Mr. Herman would explain? That's the A27 dealing with the low-income housing credit.
Senator Moy moves the A27.
And we'll get an explanation of why.
Thank you.
Mr. Herman?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the A27 amendment.
Mr. Herman, we need your name.
Excuse me. My name is John Herman. I'm a lawyer at Fagree & Benson. I represent the American Institute of Architects and the Design Build Institute of America, and we've been an early participant in this coalition. With respect to the specifics of the amendment, the original language in the bill that was introduced was derived from the New York State Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Bill. After considerable conversation with the State Housing Finance Agency, they indicated they liked certain provisions of the Massachusetts law better, thought that it was a statute which would provide more efficiency in the value of the credits and better fit the marketplace for these credits. And so the amendment that you have before you is essentially the same dollars and process, but it utilizes the procedure of the Massachusetts amendment for allowing the state portion to be what they call in the business certificated, and then sold to a state business to raise additional money for the low-income project. This particular provision, in a more generic way, is intended to try to fill the gaps that we have now in the low-income projects being funded for the equity part by federal low-income credits, because those credits have declined very markedly in value with the elimination from the market of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and many of the larger banks, which no longer can use the credits. And so what we're trying to do with this is to, number one, fill the gap, leverage much more project expenditure, and second, create an independent buying pool of Minnesota-based companies that would make the Minnesota credits more competitive, both state and federal, and allow us to get a higher price for them and consequently generate more low-income housing projects.
Any question on the
This is a separate part of that same amendment.
Mr. Herman, can you explain to us Section 9? Is that not the part you worked on, the tax credit advance loan program for first-time home buyers? Or is somebody here from Housing Finance?
You worked with them, right?
Yeah.
I think this language might have came from Housing Finance.
That's correct. They've been working on this language for quite a period of time. And
can you tell us what we're doing?
Compromise language, I believe. If it's not compromise language, you go back and.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. And the language that's being suggested, I believe, is the model. I was going to do something else. This is the first-time home buyer tax credit. This is language that we've worked with the Builders Association and the Realtors on and believe that we have a structure now that the agency can operate a program for the next 6 months, which is how long the federal tax credit is available.
And tell us how it works.
Okay.
So the agency will upfront the tax credit?
Actually, Mr. Chair, the bill has an appropriation of $3 million of general fund money. And we will, which is appropriated to the Housing Finance Agency, we will make loans up to the $3 million for people who are eligible for the first-time home buyer tax credit. Those loans will be repaid at no later than June 15th of next year, with the idea that they get their refund with their 2010, after they file their 2010 taxes, and so they would pay the state back at that point.
So essentially this could allow them to upfront use the tax credit as a down payment on their loan.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Mortgage.
It's a lot of times for low and moderate income people, having the cash to close, having the down payment and the actual cash to meet the closing costs is the barrier, not the monthly payments. And so the credit doesn't really help with that. So this is just recognizing they'll get the credit and provide the assistance up front.
Senator Metzen, that seems like an important provision.
It's a very important provision, and I want to give credit to the Housing Finance Group here. And all the people that this was kind of a challenge to get this language put together, but it does help immensely that first-time home buyers that get that cash up front to get into that home. So they had to be very creative, and this is going to work.
The realtors here, what do they think about the upfront tax credit? Thumbs up? Senator Metzen's doing good work.
You want to get that on the tape?
Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you. The question I had was on the low income tax credit. Does that apply toward a builder or toward just a nonprofit corporation? Can this apply to a for-profit corporation, or is this just for the buyers that are involved with the low income mortgage that they're applying for?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, in a general way, the low-income housing tax credits are a program that's been around now for about 20 years. About a dozen states have companion state low-income housing tax credits. With respect to low-income projects, the biggest barrier, because you are providing either 40% of the units at 60% of median or 20% of the units at 50% of median, the biggest barrier is raising equity, because the projects tend to have very low rates of return. And the federal system provides this low-income credit which is a credit available only to C corporations and a very limited group of unique investors that have very high passive losses under federal tax law. And in exchange for this credit, they provide the equity investment in the low-income project. What's happened in the marketplace because of the lack of profitability of the largest buyers of these federal credits, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and big banks, which were aggressive buyers until the last 2 years because it provided both a good economic return and also Community Reinvestment Act Community Reinvestment Act regulatory benefits to the banks, the value of the credits has declined quite precipitously. The concept of the state credit is to, number one, fill the hole and get these projects back to the point where they're viable. We have projects with credits as much as 3 years old, which haven't yet gone into the ground, that we'd like to leverage into construction. There's huge demand for the projects. But also to build a Minnesota buying pool. We have a lot of Minnesota corporations with Minnesota income that have been not in this market because the field has been occupied primarily by these financial intermediaries. And we think we can bring back General Mills. We can bring back some of the larger insurance companies. We can bring back Medtronic, because this will provide a reason for them to pay particular attention in the state of Minnesota. And we think that will strengthen both sides of the equation. Obviously, we'll make some money on the state credit, but we'll also strengthen the bidding for the federal credit and hopefully generate more equity. It's available to a project regardless of whether the project is being developed by a nonprofit or a for-profit development entity. And I think maybe Ms. Orr could be a better on this statistic, but my experience is that the market is, you know, depending on the year, 50-50, 60-40, for-profit, nonprofit developers. There are a lot of both in this low-income marketplace.
Senator Limmer.
Like the federal provisions, does the state tax credit, is it transferable? Can it be sold to other corporations as well?
Mr. Herman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, with respect to the state tax credit, it would be transferable from the development taxpayer entity by selling a participation in the project. Or, as I said, we're following this Massachusetts model, which allows the state credit to be separately certified and then transferred to a state taxpayer only so that we maximize the potential bidding for it. We provide that the state credit owner doesn't have to have a tax allocation that follows the allocation of the federal buyer, because under federal law, the federal buyer has to get 90, if he's getting the credit, he has to get a comparable amount of depreciation, profit, and losses. So we think with these changes that Massachusetts put in their statute and have worked well there, we should be able to get much better pricing on the state credit and make it a more efficient tool for generating the equity money for these projects.
And Mr. Chair, one last question. Senator Metzen, your last witness from MHFA talked about the applicability of this program for a buyer's down payment. And my experience being in the real estate business is that's exactly where we need to focus our attention.
James Carville.
The interest rates, as you know, in the real market, the general market, are low compared. I remember being a loan officer writing low-income mortgage programs, low income at 12.9%. People would stand outside a bank over a weekend hoping to get in line for a McKnight low-income loan at 12.9, and they'd get to the point that if anybody got out of line to just take care of general business and come back, they'd get in a fistfight over a 12.9% loan. Now the market rate is hovering around 5.25, 5.5.
Yeah.
And the focus has to be on the down payment. And I'm glad to see that this, finally we're getting there. So
thank you for your that observation. That's a big part of this bill. That's why we put aside that, in addition to the $100 million to $3 million, to do just what you're talking about, Senator Limmer. And I didn't put these parts of the puzzle together, but whoever did a very nice job. And I looked at it a couple times. I think we're in good shape here, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Party.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Metzen, I agree. I like the first-time home buyer tax credit. And so my question is with the low-income housing credit, why this approach? I thought from housing finance, and so we just cut their challenge fund, which has been very effective and flexible. I'm just curious why you or they feel that this is more better way to do it than restoring money to the challenge fund.
I, as you know, have been a supporter of the challenge fund, but with the restrictions or the problems with the budget around here, I mean, we couldn't keep everything in, so this is an attempt to at least help out in that area, Senator Marty. I too, would wish that we could add more money back into the challenge thing, but that, I guess, wasn't my decision.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I just thought I have heard from housing finance and so on that this was not the most efficient way to stimulate more construction of housing and so on, and that the challenge fund might be doing so. And I guess I was just curious if you or the agency had any comments on that. Is the agency still here?
No, no. Ms. Orr still here?
Mr. Chair, I could provide some comments, and then I think maybe Ms. Orr would be interested in commenting as well.
Mr. Herman?
Everyone agrees that giving the agency direct dollars which can substitute for equity in the projects is the most efficient way to do it because it provides 100 cents on the dollar today. We and the agency disagree a little bit about how efficient this will be. I think with the Massachusetts approach, we can get returns on this equivalent to California, which is 60 cents on the dollar of credit. Recall that these credits are provided over a 10-year period, and the first year of the credit doesn't begin till 2010 for projects that would come into service in 2010. So the tax cost of doing a tax credit program in this biennium is very low. And so if we can generate, let's say, $30 million or $20 to $30 million of benefit with this program, the tax cost in 2010 might be a maximum of $5 million. And so we get terrific leverage out of this. One of the hallmarks of the bill is we were trying to do things in the bill that would leverage more private investment more quickly, because right now is obviously when the jobs are not available, when the projects aren't starting. The agency in the amendment will come back to the legislature after a period of time to let the market develop and stabilize in 2014 and report on whether this is the most efficient way to do it or whether they would recommend some alternatives or tinkering. My guess is they'd come back sooner if they decide it doesn't work very well. So that was how we moved to this approach, and I think with the Massachusetts language, the agency has indicated they're not raising the same level of concern as before.
So, Mr. Chair, and maybe Ms. Orr could comment. So, in effect, the question is, this is a lot less efficient way, but because the upfront costs are less, going this route. I guess then a related question for Ms. Orr is when the agency, if we're doing this now just because it's less expensive now, if when the agency comes back, can you convert some of this to it, or once we've gone this route, are we're kind of committed to the credit we're giving once we give the credit?
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, you're right that once we've allocated the credit, it's envisioned, I think, in most cases that the credit would actually be sold to someone else, not the owner of the property, but the owner of the property would sell it to someone who has a Minnesota state tax liability. And so they'll
will be counting on having the credit for 10 years. So the question is what period of time is sufficient for us to figure out whether we can get the price of the credits up to make it worth the state's money? Our experience with the federal tax credit was it was a temporary program initially, and so that the price wasn't very good initially because investors weren't coming in. They weren't seeing this as being something they wanted to build an industry around since they didn't know if it was going to be around next year. So there are some. This initially, it's probably not going to do as well as it would do in the long run. Mr. Herman and I disagree about how efficient it's going to be. I think California is, in some ways, a unique economy and not comparable to Minnesota. Minnesota simply doesn't have the same level of so we just have a difference of opinion. I think it's more likely that we'll get about 30 cents on the dollar. Mr. Herman is right, though. We'll get that money up front. It will cost the state money over 10 years as opposed to costing the state that money right at the beginning. We are in a situation right now where we have projects that are stalled because we don't have the gap financing. The tax credit will help close that gap. And we're cobbling together as many different sources of funding as we can in order to get these projects moving as quickly as possible.
Senator.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. One other question I had on the transfer. I noticed on page 6, line 6, there's a dollar amount transferred to be transferred in 2009 from the Contractor Recovery Fund. And is the... is that recovery fund? Is that whose jurisdiction is that? Is that Commerce or is that Dolly? Or do we know who that is? And what is their opinion on taking money from the recovery fund?
Mr. Chair, this actually was this actually is language from the House, Senator Limmer. The House didn't have a general fund appropriation for the first time home buyer tax credit. So the House's proposal is to use the recovery funds. But the Senate had appropriated money in Senator Tomasoni's committee. So this actually, Section 16 should not be part of the amendment.
I think she's right. We appropriated $3 million for this Housing Finance Agency, part of this bill. And we didn't have this transfer language, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think that probably should come out.
We take out from one.
We put the money aside.
Including 6 million.
Yes, yes.
Senator Skoy moves to delete.
Good, that's good.
It's not all of Section 16, is it?
Section 16, line 6-1 to.
All of Section 16.
That's great. Yeah, we.
And line 6.32.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Well, by doing this, we still will retain the transferability of the tax credits. They could be still sold. And that's recognized in another part of the bill.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, the tax credit transferability is on the housing tax credit, the rental housing tax credit, and yes, that still is available, and that's one of the benefits of using the Massachusetts model is that you can transfer it to someone who really needs the tax credit, who has a bigger tax liability. The first-time homebuyer tax credit is not transferable. It stays with the first-time homebuyer.
Oh, okay. All right.
On the Skoy motion to delete Section 16 and line 6.32. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
One last question. On page 4, line 8, this is on the education promotion and enhancement where the agency is going to conduct periodic seminars and promotional events targeted on corporations so that they're aware of these credits. It says targeted to corporations with major operations in Minnesota. Does that mean that other corporations that may not have a, I don't know what major operation means. I don't know if it's defined this way, but does that mean that other corporations without a major operation in Minnesota are excluded in some way from purchasing these credits?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I didn't draft that section, but will anybody who's interested in buying these tax credits, we'd be happy to help them figure out how to do that. Yeah. So it's a question really of having a Minnesota tax liability.
But Mr. Chair, the purpose of this provision is giving direction to the agency to promote this feature for potential sale. And what they're doing, what we in the legislature are assuming, is that only huge corporations are the viable purchasers of this. And we're giving direction to the agency to go ahead and do that, but at the exclusion of trying to promote it to anybody else.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I don't think that was the intent, but perhaps you want to talk to the author of the language.
Mr. Herman, what's the intent here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, I think you've raised a good point. Obviously, you do need to have material Minnesota tax liability to make this a viable program, because entry into the entities is a moderately complicated investment decision with due diligence requirements. But I think a better language here would be targeted to corporations with, quote, tax liability or material tax liability in Minnesota and take out major operations. Because we would be approaching companies which are, and I think Ms. Orr and I do disagree about how attractive this is going to be a bit, but I think we have a unique constellation of corporate headquarters here, and I think we have many, many startup companies and mid-sized companies, as well as many, many community banks, which have not been participants in this marketplace heretofore and are very viable candidates, particularly if we can get a couple of the Minnesota-based brokerage houses, Doherty, Piper, RBC Dane, to develop their own funds for the investment here. And so I think it'll be appealing to even companies with, you know, only tens of millions of dollars of revenue.
All right. Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer, how about if we just took out targeted to corporations with major operations in Minnesota? And then the sentence would read, promotional events to inform potentially interested purchasers.
The only question I have on that, Mr. Chair, is do we want to make sure that Minnesota corporations are seen as a priority in having the ability to purchase, as opposed to, let's say, a corporation out on the East Coast? I don't know if that's, legal to restrict
because of the
or
tax.
Not, but
I think that Mr. Chairman and Senator Limmer, they're the ones that are going to be interested in this.
The Minnesota corporations or the?
Yeah.
All right.
Minnesota.
Well, they have to have Minnesota tax liability,
Minnesota.
Right?
Yeah, that's why they have to keep that.
And what we're talking about
Minnesota
is
tax liability.
What we're talking about is
that's the qualifier
is the promotion of the program right now.
Right.
Yeah. So, how's the department going to promote the program and to who? So, I think members, Senator Limmer moves on line 4.8 to delete the words targeted that were after events. Delete the words targeted to corporations with major operations in Minnesota, and then continue the sentence. And I think that then reads fine.
Mr. Chair, is Mr. Herman, do you have an opinion on that change? Is that all?
Mr. Herman, is that okay?
Mr. Chair, I believe that would be appropriate.
Ms. Orr, that kind of would meet the department's intent, right?
Yes.
On the Limmer motion, on line 4.8, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no, the motion prevails. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Orr or Mr. Herman, we had a pretty extensive discussion last night about tax credits in the conference committee, and Senator Marty was there and Senator Saltzman, and they talked about return on investment on these credits, and you guys have done the same today here. And one of the questions that occurred to me last night that never got resolved, and I thought I'd try it today, you know, you talked about 30% return and 60% return, but, you know, the value of your money over time, if you're on a 10-year time period, if you're at 7.2%, will double. So when you're figuring your return on investment, are you calculating the value of money over time, or is that just a calculation where you're adding up the numbers and coming up to the 30 and the 60%?
$1 million in tax credits allocated to it, and the investor would pay $300,000 at 30% for that $1 million in tax credits. So the state is going to basically forego $1 million worth of revenues.
Yeah.
And $300,000 is going to come into the pocket. So the state will be foregoing that $1 million over a 10-year period.
Well, but Mr. Chair, Ms. Orr, if we get the $300,000 of investment this year and you get to use that money for 10 years while they're making the payments, you have to count the value of money over time, which would turn the $300,000 into very likely $600,000 or more. And if Mr. Herman is right and you get 60% return, you're more. You've actually made money on it. So I think that when we think about these credits, you can't just – add it up like that, because it's a much more complicated calculation than just addition.
Any other questions on the A27 amendment?
I renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
On the motion to adopt the A27 as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Langseth has an amendment first.
This is Senate File 2128. Scott Hutchins from Moorhead is here. This does have something to do with the flood situation, but it is to match up the Fargo, North Dakota side of the river on tax abatement on housing. So, Scott, if you could...
anybody looked at this?
We have some people from Moorhead here. Members, we're trying to, Senator Metzen, we're trying to get a Senate position here on some flood-related tax abatement that Senator Langseth would like to accomplish.
Well, yeah, I just wish that maybe we were told about it or something. I'll hear it. And this is very delicate. We've been working on it for 6 months, so I hope it's Senator, fine with everybody.
Senator Metzen, we're not adding much to your load here, but we do want to get Senator Langseth's provision. It was just introduced 2 days ago. The tax committee is probably not going to have another hearing this session, so this is the only opportunity to get a Senate position on this flood piece. So if we could have representatives from the city of Moorhead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Scott Hutchins, Community Services Director for the City of Moorhead. And Lisa, with me is Lisa Vattensdahl, Neighborhood Services Manager for the City of Moorhead.
Welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This morning, the House Tax Committee passed a delete everything amendment that we would like to see.
Do we have that language?
Yes. It wouldn't be delete everything.
We'll just look and see if the language is the same as the bill introduction.
We're trying to amend this bill too. This is the last vehicle out of it.
But let's testify in the
provision. Mr. Chair, members, thank you. The city, first of all, thank you all for your support and thoughts and actions to assist Moorhead and others along the Red River. We are in our post flood recovery phase at this time, removing 8 miles of sandbag dikes, 2.5 million sandbags. We have inspected over 300 homes of persons that are in the floodplain that have damage or suspect they have damage. And we have 60 to 70 persons that have expressed interest in selling their homes and not having to put up with this kind of activity in the future, or their homes are in such a state of repair as to suggest that they not move back in. Our experience is reflected in this bill stems from 1997, and the effort here is to stabilize Morehead's housing market generally while we continue to work with damaged properties and see to it that they're taken care of. We have a concern about the overall housing market in Morehead, particularly in the next two-year period, the construction cycles of 2009 and 2010. And the proposal before you would exempt residential construction from property taxes during that period for single-family homes, the value of up to $150,000 would be exempt, and for apartments, a value of $20,000 per unit would be exempt. Our experience tells us that in 1997, the city of Fargo and the state of North Dakota were particularly aggressive at bringing resources and opportunities to stabilize and stimulate their housing market post-1997 flood. This are activities that went through the state of North Dakota, through North Dakota Housing Finance, and served to stabilize their construction activity. And we expect that it is likely we'll be confronting that same competitive situation as the construction season now unfolds. In fact, the most recent action of the state of North Dakota legislature, which just adjourned 2 days ago, was to increase their exemption for single-family property from $75,000 to $150,000. So it would seem to us as though they're cognizant and gearing up for such an effort. And while this is a short-term strategy, we believe it's an important one at a time when many, many sectors of the community are impacted and attempting to recover. None is more important to Morehead than our residential sector, and we appreciate the opportunity to be heard this morning.
And I should say, our fiscal analyst just indicated there's no cost in this bill in the upcoming biennium 10 and 11. Senator,
Mr. Chair, we don't want to cause any problem with the larger bill, and we'll see to it that that doesn't happen. But to get the position of this committee, why I would appreciate it if you just put that on for now.
Any questions, members?
Chair.
Senator Limmer.
On the classification of property, it goes from, I'm assuming, a residential 1A or 1B up to 4D. Could you tell me what 4D is?
Counsel.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, 1A and 1B are the homestead properties. 2A is the ag homestead, the residence. 4B and 4BB are the rental residential properties.
And 4D, did you mention 4D?
4D. Mr. Chair.
Let me check. Go ahead.
Yeah. I believe that is rental. Apartment residential housing for persons of low moderate income that have taken a special tax classification and as a lower class rate.
Mr. Chair, is that more than, let's say, four units?
Mr. Chair, I don't know precisely the minimum number of units that can qualify for that special classification. I'm sorry, I don't know the answer to that.
All right.
Senator Limmer, any other questions? Members, any questions? On the Langseth motion to incorporate the contents of Senate File 2128 into Senate File 2078. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much for coming down.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Metzen. Senator Metzen, I don't think we waited down too much.
Mr. Chair.
No, but I think it would be nice. You know, we worked on this. So let me know what you're doing. That's the only question I have.
Senator Metzen, we didn't know before we came here we were going to do it. I didn't learn about Senator Metzen's bill until 5 minutes before the committee hearing.
You knew about my bill five minutes before. You're talking about Senator.
I meant Langseth's bill until.
We're all on the same boat. None of us knew. Okay.
That's why we're.
That makes me feel a little.
We're all trying to accommodate everybody.
Well, don't accommodate me too much, because.
Senator Metzen, if you have trouble with this provision on the floor of the Senate, I'm sure Senator Langseth will join in to.
Only way in to help. Okay, I'm really. It's just more of the way it happened is what I'm saying.
It might get heavier yet, Senator Metzen.
Well, I would
Senator
hope.
Moi.
I would hope not.
Mr. Chair, I hate having to weigh in at this moment, but I have the A28 amendment, and I have spoken to Senator Metzen about this. I know he's not excited about this provision, and I know that our Mr. Eng Fang and the group are not the most enthusiastic, although they understand. The A28 amendment is the labor peace agreement. It is not anything new. We've seen this before in the committee. I believe we've passed it a couple of times in the past, and it's it was in the tax bill last year. So,
Chairman, I'm aware of this amendment, and I'm going to have other these folks that have worked on this for 5 months visit with the committee about it. This is a very delicate bill. It's been worked on. Labor, management, contractors, all of the people above, and came up with this very balanced language. That's all I'm going to say, but I would, this has been discussed, and our labor brothers and sisters have worked on this, don't agree with this, and with that, I'll let David visit with you, and then Mr.
Cimarron.
Mr. Chairman, and Senator Moa and members, I'm Dave Cimarron, CEO for AGC of Minnesota. One of the principles of our coalition when we first started back in December or January, I can't remember exactly, but we wanted to remain neutral on matters such as this, whether it be project type or project location or labor matters. Anything like that. Our primary purpose was to create jobs. And considering the principles of our coalition, we would respectfully decline to support this amendment.
Mr. Engfang?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as a co-chair, I would like to echo those words and add to them as much as the president of the building trades and entering this legislative session and this coalition with the idea of creating those jobs, creating a breakthrough to create some jobs in the construction industry. The importance to having a clean, neutral bill was extremely important to maintaining the respect of the coalition for each other and our goals. And I have to say that more than one occasion I was tempted to, as a representative of the building trades, ask for something that involved a labor issue. But in conjunction with the leadership of my organization and others, we did not do that. We did not try and impose this. The goal is working people, getting jobs, union, non-union, whatever. When it's all said and done, if we can implement this, work will happen. And when work happens, when projects are developed, when the bidding process is over or any negotiation project attempts are over, that will determine what type of labor relations exist on the projects. But we're not afraid to go into the market and compete. Thank you.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, could we hear from the hotel restaurant employees?
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty. My name is Wade Luneberg. I am the Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here, Local 17, better known as the Hotel Employees Union. We represent 450,000 people in hospitality throughout the country and 8,000 members here in Minnesota. Hospitality in the state of Minnesota is a gigantic industry, 275,000 people, I think, according to Deed. Inside that industry, I think Deed would also support the idea that those are amongst the lowest wage jobs in Minnesota. It is our job with Unite Here to make sure that those jobs going forward in the industry are sustainable jobs to provide a living wage with benefits and perhaps retirement benefits. We see this amendment as a way to actually protect the state from labor strife There is no doubt that as we move forward, that hospitality jobs particularly become sustainable and good jobs after these projects are up. Some of these projects could include hospitality, and we think that it's very important that the state recognize in an amendment like this that there is value in those jobs, not just built, but jobs going forward.
Mr. Chairman, members, Mike Wilhelmy on behalf of Unite Here. Just to echo some of what you've heard from Mr. Lunenburg, Unite Here supports the intention of this bill wholeheartedly. This is, yes, times are challenging right now economically, but that's a great time to be building infrastructure in this state. And we support the idea behind this bill that the state should be investing at a time when it's very cost-effective to build infrastructure that will then carry the state on as times improve. Now, the intention of this amendment that Senator Maugh has offered is to protect the state and the state's interests in the project from labor strife, should there be any regarding a hotel project. And these types of agreements are commonplace all throughout the country. Minneapolis and St. Paul has had them when they've invested in hotels with public dollars. All around the country there have been labor peace agreements. And, in fact, I believe the state of New York has a blanket one as of just this week where any hotel project where the public invests money, that there's a labor peace agreement. The idea is that that taxpayers and the public's interest needs to be protected to ensure that that investment can go forward in an orderly fashion. The language also requires quite a bit of Unite Here. They have to give up their right basically to picket or protest for as many as 5 years. So there is certainly quite a bit that's asked of the union to have this language in place. And again, it's the state's interest that the negotiations and discussions between operators of hotels and the union be orderly and not disrupt the launch of any hotels that might be built.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Maugh, I appreciate your amendment. I think it's good, but I need to be explained, or I need to understand how it fits on Senator Metzen's investment bill.
Senator Johnson, I believe that, my testifiers could probably speak to that better than I could, much more articulately.
Well, I think the issue is, Senator Johnson, is this is for a hotel to be eligible for the loan program, the loan guarantee program, the hotel would have to be willing to enter into a labor peace agreement. I think that's, and I think from that standpoint, I think it probably fits. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, maybe for the witnesses, haven't most of the hotel chains signed these in the past? I mean, I thought almost all of them had signed labor peace agreements in the past.
Mr. Chair, Senator Marty, yes, clearly Unite Here nationwide has agreements with almost every major hotel corporation and also with many large real estate interests. This is a common practice in our industry between Unite Here and the industry.
Senator Limmer.
I have a couple of questions, Mr. Chair. I haven't seen one of these put into state statute before, and I'm wondering, do we have a history in Minnesota of putting this type of thing in statute?
Did we put something like this in the Twins Bill? Mm-hmm.
Twins Bill. Tax Bill had one.
It's in the All-American.
And, Mr. Chair, the question I have is by entering into this, would one labor organization that disagrees with this, if this went into law, would this I'm assuming this would restrict their opportunity to either picket or stop work or boycott in the event that they sensed that they were being done wrong by what they assumed was an agreement that had been previously written. And now you're kind of stifling their ability to try and get whoever they're dealing with to move forward based on an earlier agreement. I'm wondering why one would want to agree to that. Does anyone have any input in that?
I think, Senator Limmer, the provision only applies to an agreement between, if you look at lines 1.8 and 1.9, to a labor organization that is most actively engaged in representing hotel workers in the county where the project will be located. So it probably only applies to one labor organization, whoever, and that might be different in different counties, I would think. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, Senator Moy has mentioned that we have passed these in the past, and yes, that is right. We put one in a previous jobs bill this year. I think the language is, and it's actually in the conference committee, the language is quite a bit broader here than we've done in previous years. And being that we already have the language in the conference committee, and this bill is going to head to the conference committee, I think we should leave the 828 amendment off and let them see if they can resolve their differences between what we've done in the past and what's in this amendment. And we would have all the opportunity in the world to add that at another time, because we currently have language in the conference committee. So I would hope that we don't adopt the 828 amendment.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I think the point that Mr. Wilhelmini made earlier is a good one. We're bring public dollars in, public money that's going to be responsible for a portion of this construction. And, you know, while I'm happy about that, and I'm happy the building trades are going to have some jobs to build some buildings, those buildings are going to be there, those hotels and restaurants are going to be there for decades to come. And so, you know, what have we accomplished if the jobs that exist for a much longer period of time or, you know, low or very low wage, part-time, no benefits, you know, have we really maximized our public investment? The restaurant and the hotel industry is notorious for not recognizing workers' organizing rights and, you know, hiring, you know, on a very, very inexpensive basis, really trying hard to keep people well below the thresholds of full-time, paying very low wages, no benefits, and it's, you know, I was a waiter for many years. It's really, really hard work, and this is the industry that is the least represented. I think if we're putting public dollars in, we have a slightly higher standard to try to accomplish on behalf of workers over a long period of time.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Wilhelmini.
Mr. Chairman, and to Senator Skoy's point, too, about the language that is in the current tax bill, that's correct. That language is specific, though, to the city of Bloomington. And this bill has public benefits coming directly from the state, and so that language in the tax bill wouldn't be sufficient to accomplish the goals in the amendment. We agree that we want to work something out, and we've been trying for a while. We hope that you would add this language, and we would be able to continue working on it.
Senator Skoy.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Wilhelmini, as you know, you know, it's germane to what we're working on. If you get something worked out, we can add it at any time. We don't need this language in this bill at this point to continue that discussion.
Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, I agree with Senator Skoy. It seems like we're supposed to get involved between the squabble between a couple unions, and I don't really think we should. I think if they can work it out and bring a proposal before the end of the session, we can certainly look at that, but the tax committee really shouldn't be the ones to dictate terms between two conflicting unions or more. And I would agree with Senator Skoy that this probably is not or should not be included in Senator Metzen's bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Moy.
I'd like an opportunity to put this amendment on, and I, you know, have a commitment to Senator Metzen and to the individuals around here that I am more than a willing participant in these conversations so we move forward. And I'm a member on the conference committee, and so the conversation can't continue forward.
Members, I know there's some concern about this as it relates to one or two large hotel operators. And I guess what we don't want to have happen is put something in this jobs bill that kind of becomes a clinker and maybe puts us in a position where hotels are excluded from this stimulus bill. But so I think more work probably needs to be done, but I think for today at least, I agree with Senator Moy that, but I do strongly encourage the witnesses to, let's see if we can work something out with it. There's a hotel or two that we anticipate some problems with. Let's try to figure that out so that we don't get ourselves into a position where hotel construction is kind of preempted by this provision in the bill. So I think some work needs to be done between now and the day we adjourn, and I'm hopeful that this bill ends up, Senator Metzen, in the final conference committee on the tax bill or some other bill around here that is going to go to the governor's desk. On the MAW motion on adopting the 828 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
The motion prevails.
Divisions.
Division being requested. All those in favor, raise your hand.
The amendment or the bill?
Okay. Opposed? The motion does not prevail on a tie vote, 5-5.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. So the 828 is not adopted. Is there any other amendments? Senator Martin.
Mr. Chair, no amendments. I think the bill's got a lot of good stuff in. I had two questions, I guess, one of which is for Senator Metzen. When, assuming this bill passes in roughly this form, when we say we have 30-50% unemployment in building trades, this summer, is that going to make 5% difference, 10% difference? Does anybody have estimates on that? Maybe Mr. Anfang? And the other question I had quickly, I think an earlier version of this bill had expansion of Job Z. That's gone now, right?
That's correct. Well, we, Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, it's our belief that once this is passed, the lenders are going to get into this program and let some money out the door. We think this is just enough guarantee to make the lenders entice them to put the money out. And as soon as loans can be approved, which could be, in our business, it's 3 to 4 or 5 weeks you can get these things turned around. And this is the product that will get that money out the door, in my opinion. And I would think we could get a lot of people working within the next 2-3 months and working all summer. And Mr. Anfang might have a better number on that. But I think this is going to jumpstart, hopefully helping quite a bit the Minnesota economy. And I think it
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and as co-chair of the group, I would answer the question this way, Senator Marty. Because of the broadness and the diversity of the group, I will think if this passes, you will see an immediate light go on in a lot of architects' offices for work that has been tabled, that has been started, that has been put on hold. There are a number of very significant projects in the state of Minnesota that actual construction has started and has been put on hold. I think this light will go on and say, here's another tool that we can use, and this $3 to $5 billion worth of work that's sitting there, quote unquote, shovel ready, the architect's work is by and large done. It's those are the projects that will be able to put the hands on the jobs and in the seats of the machines right away, and the lights will go on in the offices and the whole industry. The developers will see an opportunity to take advantage of this new opportunity that you hopefully will give them to finance their projects and stimulate, get their blood pumping again for this industry.
Any other comments? Senator Sundrum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I want to thank Senator Metzen for bringing us forward. I haven't read it cover to cover, but, you know, it looks good. It smells good. We've got to find $100 million, and I think, you know, good people with the proper motivation can do that around here. But I think it's a good step towards making something happen in Minnesota. So, Senator Metzen, I applaud you for that. Now, having said that, let me just say, and I have to, I'll draw back to last Friday night in the Transportation Conference Committee, where I had sitting behind me $188 million worth of people. Labor in Rochester area says 1,000 jobs ready to go. Shovel ready for the last 4 years. And I can't get it done, and it won't be done according to MnDOT now until the fall of 2010. And more than likely that money will be gone. So Senator Metzen, congratulations on this one. And if I could only find a way to get my project, and frankly, it's not my project, it's a project of the people, done before the end of the session. If you have any thoughts, I would really appreciate any help that you can give.
I'm aware of your project, and I'm...
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. I know we're past the discussion of the A28 amendment, but Senator Metzen, maybe Mr. Anfang, you know, we potentially are going to have, you know, hundreds of jobs in these hotels and these restaurants. You know, what are we going to do? And Senator Metzen, I heard you say this is not necessary, this amendment is not necessary. What are we going to do going forward to see that we're not hiring hundreds of people under some of the most difficult working conditions with the least amount of stability, lowest benefits, lowest pay, worst hours, hardest work? What are we going to do to not leave our brothers and sisters, our working brothers and sisters behind, if this is not necessary? We're paying for with public money.
Chairman, this does not in any way, and I've been a I don't know what my record is in the labor industry in the past, but I'm sure it's 9,800% pro-labor. This does not prohibit anything going forward, so they can make their case later on and do their bargaining. So this doesn't close the door.
So, Mr. Chair, did I hear that Senator Metzen is going to try to work with these hotel interests?
Yeah, and we'll keep working on it.
It's not a small matter,
I understand.
Senator Pongemiller.
I just want to echo Senator Dibble's comments. Somehow we got to get this thing through the Senate. And have people opposed to it, so I think it was unfortunate that amendment didn't go on.
Senator Pogemiller moves that Senate File 2078, as amended, be recommended to pass. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
The motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Members, we have the...
It's the delete everything for the public finance.
This is the delete everything amendment to the public finance bill, Senate File 2057. So the chair takes Senate File 2057 from the table, and Senator Skoy offers the A4 amendment. And members, this gets the bill into the shape that it's contained in the tax conference committee.
And then also the Cook County bonding thing went in there. That was in the sales tax. Sorry.
And it includes the Cook County bonding provision that was also in the bill, but in a different article in the bill. And that's already actually been adopted by the conference committee. On the Skoy motion to adopt the A4. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Senator Skoy moves Senate File 1257 as amended be recommended to pass.
Oh.
Senator Dibble.
I'm sorry. We're on the 1257?
1257 is the public finance bill.
Oh, sure. I can quickly offer the A5 amendment that we spoke of earlier.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, while it's coming around very quickly, what this does is it repeals a session law from 1959 that's specific to the city of Minneapolis that has to do with the operation and maintenance cost of street lighting that's in conflict with how Minneapolis is proceeding to establish how they assess for and tax for street lighting on a district basis and you know, identifying the properties that are benefited. We thought we took care of this in another session law. Apparently, if you ever want to figure out what you can do in Minneapolis, you have to go really dig back into all these little nitpicky micromanaging session laws that go back to the beginning of time. So our attorneys discovered this one, and so this is a technical fix that we have to repeal this law in order to proceed how Minneapolis is putting together its street lighting program.
And Senator Dibble, the many other Minneapolis senators think this
Senator
is a good idea.
Miller gave us his blessing to proceed.
Senator Pogemiller gave it the green light, so we'll blame him if Senator Higgins or Berglund aren't happy.
We'll visit with him on the floor. This is a late-breaking bill. That's why it's coming up now. We just discovered this in the last couple of weeks. The bill is introduced today, either today or at our previous session.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I wonder what lawyers are spending time looking through 1959 session laws to find these. But
I recommended that we have a project in which we pull out all the Minneapolis-specific session laws and maybe consolidate them in one place, get rid of the bad stuff, and kind of wipe the slate clean.
On the Dibble motion to adopt the A5.
Aye.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. A5 is adopted. On the SCOI motion to adopt Senate File 1257 as amended. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails.
Sir, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Just as a backup question, I see that there's a 60% requirement that was in the new language on the A4 amendment on page 3, lines 6 and 7. I was just wondering, is that a I know we require 60% when we bond as a legislature, but why are we requiring a municipality a 60% requirement when I don't think we've had it before?
It's for the airport authority bonds.
Council.
Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, this is, if you look up in the existing law, too, this has to do with, I believe it's airport, municipal airport bonds, and this would allow them to be issued without referendum. So there's a higher standard than the majority. And if you look at the clause before that, there's a parallel provision that also requires a 60% vote.
And then, Mr. Chair, in the section of mail elections and questions, I see that if it's a referendum question, that's been removed. And then...
Senator Limmer, I think that issue... The public finance bill went to the local government committee first,
all right.
And that was the piece in their jurisdiction. And the problem right now is when a school district wants to hold a multiple question referendum with multiple questions on it, they can't do that by a mail election right now because they can't ask more than one question. Okay. So it's to try to accommodate really the current practice of school districts in having more than one question on the ballot.
Could you state that again, Mr. Chair?
Senator Limmer,
question on multiple questions.
School districts oftentimes on their ballot have more multiple
right.
questions.
Right.
It might be extending an existing operating levy. It might be
right.
a capital bond.
Right.
It might be a
right.
new operating levy. Under current law, they can't use a mail ballot with more than two questions on it.
All right. Okay.
Senator Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just please an explanation on Section 23, the St. Paul Port Authority credit.
Council.
Mr. Chair, Senator Johnson, that is a bill that had been brought to the committee by Senator Pappas, and that was included, amended into the, or adopted, and then we placed that into the public finance article of the tax bill. That would, the city of St. Paul had placed a deposit of $31,800 for a bond issue that didn't materialize, and they're looking to use the same deposit for a future bond issue.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members?
Why does Cook County need to have their dollar amount of their bonding authority expanded by $6 million?
Senator Limmer, the issue there is the local option sales tax that they're looking to reauthorize that they've had for, previously had for the hospital and the nursing home. Mm-hmm. They're looking to reauthorize that local option sales tax. The legislature last year gave them the authority to do that. They've added some other projects that they'd like to be able to fund, including a biomass energy plant that they want to fund in the city, so they need a larger bonding threshold than they currently have in law, paid for by a local option sales tax.
Okay.
And the tax conference committee has actually already adopted that provision. So, Senator Scoy renews his motion that Senate File 1257, as amended, be recommended to pass. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. The motion prevails. Members, that's it, and I don't believe we have any business in front of the Tax Committee this year, but stay tuned. At least between now and May 18th, I don't think we have any additional business.
Yeah.
But thank you all for your attendance this morning. This committee's adjourned.